You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. This is James. Today, I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy.
Hello, hello. We're matching again.
We are matching. Well, black shirts. So this week, before we jump into it, I want to talk to you guys about something really cool. I know that I've talked about a lot of times about how I make money on the podcast, different things that I do or whatever. I happen to make it into a book called $1,000, 100 Ways by Nick Loper. I'm going to put the link in the show notes and stuff for it. But it's a great way. There's like 100 different ways in there from different people on how to make money. And I did an interview with Nick via email. He asked me a bunch of questions. I interviewed, sent him information about it and stuff. And I think that there's a lot in the book that will help a lot of people who are looking for something else. Like if you're a stand-up comedian, there's a ton of ways to make money, you know, running shows, writing stuff, putting together things for commercials or punching up, you know, speeches or scripts or like all kinds of stuff. So it's a good thing for people to know. And I'm really glad that I can contribute to this book and help. And Nick Loper runs Side Hustle Nation, which is a podcast and a website. And he talks about all different side hustles. Side hustles, how I got started in that journey. So find stuff in the book that'll help you out. And everybody can use the extra $1,000, right? I mean, right? Yeah, I think. Could you use $1,000, Luke?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of people who are hustlers, who not in the bad way, but like in the best way possible, like honestly, I don't know how he does it because he seems to be everywhere. I don't know how he's doing it, but please welcome our guest for today, Bobby Smith, AKA B Smitty, all the way from San Antonio, Texas. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for the introduction. Glad to be here on the Clean Comedy Podcast.
Yeah, it was good. I got to know you because we did a Zoom show together, which means you're definitely out there hustling because not a lot of comedians are out there doing that kind of stuff, but you were there doing it. How many of those have you done, would you say you've done, probably?
Yeah, during the pandemic, yeah, 2020, I probably did at least 10.
Yeah. And they're good, right? They're pretty easy. You get to stay at home. You wear shorts, finally, if you want to, while you do it, you know what I'm saying? All that stuff.
Definitely an adjustment, you know, each one progressed.
Yeah, I know. My first one I did, I felt so awkward. Like, what is going on here? Because you can't always hear feedback from people. You can't always see stuff. So it was weird. But on the show that I did with you, you murdered. Like, I was like almost crying. It was so funny. I was like, who is this guy? This is great. So I started to look you up and stuff.
I think you were the only one that reacted like that.
No. They were laughing, but she had everybody muted. That wasn't your fault, I swear.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know what was going on. I mean, you helped it out a lot because you were, and I'm really an interactive comedian that feeds off an audience. So you really helped me. So yeah. I appreciate that.
No, thank you. I'm good. Thanks for bringing it. I was like, man, this is amazing. So let's get your backstory, your origin story, how long you've been doing comedy, how you got started, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, I've been doing comedy for about 19 years. At least I started when I was 20. Nice. And, you know, I started a completely different comedian. I was, you know, I thought comedy was meant to be dirty. You know, that's all I knew. That's what people would tell me. Like, people would actually say, like, you know, you have to cuss, do comedy. And that's kind of how I started, you know, to the point where I couldn't invite my parents to shows because, you know, I'm a young dude just saying whatever I wanted. I was doing it for a long time. I actually stopped for about a year just kind of to refocus. But, you know, I dove into different things like teaching defensive driving, you know, comedy defensive driving. And that kind of helped me, you know, realize I could do clean comedy, you know, because I'm doing 6 hours in the class and I'm making people laugh. And I'm like, man, this is clean. So that style kind of translated to the stage a little bit. And that kind of helped me evolve as a comedian and, you know, be able to be a little more versatile. You know, getting different crowds that got tickets and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm not even sure where you're at. I don't know if y'all have driving safety classes.
Yeah, in LA, they do. And a lot of them have them online now, too. So you can really have an online instructor who does similar stuff. But I've always wanted to do that. I don't think there's a big demand for that right now. But yeah, I've always wanted to do the Queen Comedy driving class. I think it'd be fun. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It's definitely a dying business for live classroom. Online has took over. So I'm lucky if I teach one class a month, and like seriously lucky.
Yeah. And then you've done it for 19 years. Where'd you start at? What city did you start in?
Started in San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I was kind of doing it fresh out of high school, to be honest with you, even though I wasn't on stage yet. I got blessed with a video camera when I was in high school and started with skits, and, you know, I'm like, man, I could become anything on this camera. And one day I pretended like I was like a comedian from Comic View. I introduced myself and I kind of came out. I wrote some jokes in like 5 minutes. But when I watched, I was like I kind of had a knack for it, you know? I was like, wow, like, I may actually try this. And yeah, that's just kind of happened when I got the guts to do it when I was about 20.
Nice. And where was the first place you went up at?
It was a talent show. I was the only comedian.
Oh, did you win?
Yeah. So everybody got a trophy. It was one of them.
Oh, okay.
Participation trophy deal. So I guess I won.
And then now, I grew up in Texas as well. I grew up in Temple, Texas, which is like right around kind of like 2 hours away from where you're at in San Antonio. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like northeast of Austin or whatever. So okay.
It's probably a good place to hit a lot of big cities.
Yeah, because I was out there a couple weeks ago. I drove from Waco to San Antonio and then from San Antonio back to Waco because that's where I stay and my grandma lives up there. So, but I didn't know of any comedy clubs growing up. I didn't know they even existed until I moved to LA. Like, even when I lived in Vegas, I knew they had like ones on the strip, but those were like ones reserved for like people who had been on TV or whatever. So I had no clue how to even get started in stand-up. So I started late, way much later than you. But what's the comedy scene like in San Antonio? I know that Austin's blowing up because you have like Joe Rogan and those guys coming, but what's the comedy scene like in San Antonio?
It has its own, I mean, it has a reputation. I mean, of course, Austin kind of bleeds into San Antonio a little bit. So, you know, the Austin scene is helping the San Antonio scene. But San Antonio is considered more, I don't know, people like more drunker crowds, maybe. you know, of course, it's more Hispanic humor. But it's a smaller market, you know, compared to Dallas and Houston. But I think it's growing. And I don't know if you knew this, but I'm opening a comedy club here. I've been working on it for the past 4 months, so hopefully that helps elevate the scene.
Awesome. And when does that open?
Labor Day weekend is the opening weekend. Ooh. We're not calling it our grand opening because we're gonna have like a bigger comedian for our grand opening. Not to say that the guy that's, you know, opening weekend's not big. He's, you know, he's just, you know, not a television name.
Right.
But yeah, Labor Day weekend is going down.
That's
starting
awesome.
James Creviston.
I wish, man. I would come anytime. You want, I'll come out there, no problem. And what's it called? What's the club called?
Upstage Comedy Lounge.
Woo, that sounds awesome. And it's in the heart of San Antonio, or is it outside a little bit or what?
Yes, it's near the airport, probably about 3-4 minutes from the airport.
Nice.
It's a good location.
And how hard was that for you to, like, I have always wanted to, now this would be my dream though. I've always wanted to open a comedy shop, but I've also wanted to be tied into a barbecue place. So, cause I love barbecue. So I was like, you know,
okay.
So I know it sounds weird, but I feel like you could get barbecue and bits or something like that as the name of the place, something like that, okay. You know? So
I like it. I really like it. Hey, don't give up that dream.
No. And so, how hard has it been to do this? Because you're in a major metropolitan city. It's going to cost an arm and a leg for space. Like, what was that process like?
It's since the very beginning, it's been a process. You said it. things happen, like something different every day. Like, I'll get a call and, you know, it's like, man, I know it's going to be something bad. I know it's going to be something. So it's either, you know, from us losing our first location to, you know, the landlord having to do different stuff that he's never done for to get inspections done. And he's like, you know, it's always something different. So I think once we get it going, we're really going to appreciate it. And I think everything happens for a reason. I'm like, you know, we were just trying to rush it at the beginning. I know we were. So now it's allowing us to put more time, like, oh, let's add this detail. So I think it's going to be like just much, much better once it's finally going. So I'm not really tripping anymore like I was at one point. So, but we may do barbecue plates every now and then. We're still working on the food part.
Yeah, there you go. Worst case, you get Rudy's to help you. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you don't like Rudy's?
I love Rudy's. I love Rudy's barbecue. Yeah, no. Are you kidding me? Okay, so this is a true story. I landed in Austin. I got our rental car. I drove our rental car directly to the first Rudy's in Round Rock. Got off and had brisket within like 25 minutes of being in Texas. Like, I was not going to – like, I'm going to go have barbecue. I grew up there. I love barbecue. I'm going to eat it there. So, you know.
So, to you, Texas has the number one barbecue out of anywhere.
There's no place in the world that has better barbecue than Texas. Sorry. Man,
that's what I agree. But in Austin, which has some of the best food places, you chose Rudy's because I've heard some phenomenal places.
Well, the thing is, I didn't want to get stuck in Austin because I would have tried to go to, like, Franklin's or something else like that. But I knew that I could find a Rudy's close. And, I mean, they're like the McDonald's of barbecue in Texas. That's true. But I figured at least it would be –
I'll give them more credit than that.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, they're everywhere. Like, you can find a Rudy's, like, everywhere. So I'm not going to not find barbecue. But I also went to, like, Black's Barbecue. I would
never had it, but I heard, like, it's phenomenal things.
Fantastic ribs. Brisket was okay. Not as good as Heart 8 Barbecue, which is out in Stevensville. Went out there, had fantastic brisket. I mean, it was just great. Like, everything was good. I never had any problems. My kids, who are not really barbecue eaters, still loved it, so they were good about it.
Wow.
They prefer banana pudding, but that, you know, that's just whatever. Right. They are.
Yeah, who don't like banana pudding?
Right, everyone loves banana pudding. So it was all good. It was great, and I just – really love, I mean, that just reminds me of being home. So that I had that barbecue.
And then I understand. I have to cut you. Do you know how to make brisket?
Yeah. No, I have a smoker and everything. Yeah. I make tri-tip, brisket, ribs. I love barbecue. Like, it's like, legitimately, if I like had, like, someone said, hey, you can't do comedy anymore, you can't do anything with comedy, do you have to do something else, I would just go be like a barbecue guy. I just go start making barbecue. So
Dang, you really love barbecue.
I love barbecue. I think Luke knows this too, because we had for one of my birthdays, we had barbecue. Like, we did all Texas style barbecue with, like, white bread and onions and pickles and all that stuff. We did everything, and brisket, and we had a big spread, and it was awesome. So I love barbecue.
That's considered Texas style barbecue with the light bread and the onion and stuff. Texas is the only one that kind of do it like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's mostly like Central Texas too. Like, if you go to other parts, like as you get towards Louisiana, it has like a little bit of different stuff because they make different kinds of sausages and different kinds of and also the wood that they use is different. So we're used to like mesquite in Central Texas and stuff like that because it's kind of everywhere. So. Yeah, I could go deep down the barbecue hole, man. Telling you.
Are you a sauce guy or no sauce?
No, I don't like sauce, except for I like Dr. Pepper barbecue sauce. That is my only sauce that I actually love.
I don't know if I can agree, just because I've only had the Dr. Pepper sauce with Pluckers. They have that flavor in it. It ain't bad, but it's not my go-to.
You may have some. I just don't eat sauce. I usually don't eat sauce, but because I'm such a big, like, Dr. Pepper fan, like, that would be the only time I use it. Although I am a fan of, like, the Carolina Gold sauce that you get from, like, from Carolina, where they have, like, it's like a mustard vinegar stuff. That I would put on, like, a pulled pork sandwich or something like that. Anyways, it's not a barbecue podcast, people. I apologize. For that.
So I feel left out. I've never had barbecue in Texas, so I'm like, I'm a Chick-fil-A sauce guy, I guess.
Oh, Chick-fil-A's just like that too. Same thing. I had one more question though. What was the hardest part of putting together a comedy club? Like, was it finding a name, finding a location, like finding a staff, planning it out? Like, have you ever run any of that kind of stuff before?
No experience of running like a, I guess a room. The room, right. we ran, our room survived through the pandemic. So even after the pandemic, we were like having sold out shows like right when they, you know, about 50% back in or whatever. So that really prepared us, like, oh, okay, I kind of know how to book a little bit. Oh, I kind of know how to, you know, make sure we have enough seats, you know. So that was really preparing us at the same time. And my partner, you know, the things he does with the sound and lighting and stuff like that. So we were kind of training and didn't even realize it.
But, that's awesome.
Yeah. So as far as coming up with names and stuff like the staff, I couldn't do it alone. Like, having a partner makes it just that much easier, just bouncing ideas off each other and not being afraid to tell each other no.
Oh, that's good. And then have you had a hard time getting, like, you know, TV grade comedians to come, or is that like something that's easier? Are you finding those negotiations difficult? Like, what's that process like?
Yeah, definitely. That's still going to be a challenge because, you know, the bigger the name, the harder the negotiation. They don't need me. I need them. You know, they can do whatever they want. So I've been doing research from, you know, other comedy club owners, and they kind of let me know, like, they'll demand something ridiculous just to see if you say yes. You know, they'll ask for a pair of new shoes and, you know, some crazy stuff in their contract. And I guess some people probably take it, but, you know, what I was told was, you know, like, say no, you know, write your counter offer. But, you, yeah, it's going to be a difficult process. I know.
I wonder what the weirdest thing somebody's ever asked for is. I think that's
well, I can tell you Eddie Griffin.
Okay.
He asked for a brand new pair of, well, he wants to be picked up in the limo.
Okay.
And he wants a brand new, he wears a brand new pair of Air Force One Nikes every show. So you have to buy him a pair of Air Force One shoes every show.
Wow. And so it's like, yeah, what, $300 per set of shoes? Is that right?
If you can find them, that's a hard pair of shoes. I don't know what size he wears, but yeah. That's
so
crazy.
So you have to pass on that one. Like, nah, sorry, we can't do that.
Yeah, I'm not ready for that yet.
No. And then what's that like? So you're going to probably have open mics and that kind of stuff in your club too, right? And so how are you going to run those? Like in LA, you have to either like pay for a drink or pay for a spot or stuff like that. Like, have you thought about that process too?
Yeah, I don't think I would do like paid spots. I don't think any place in San Antonio does that. But like you said, it's different everywhere. Like I just found out like in Vegas, they do it different. Like in Vegas, they may charge $25 for a ticket and, you know, you get free drinks all night or something crazy. But I think I'm just going to keep it traditional, you know, just a regular open mic. I tried to do contests in the past, but I don't know. How do you feel about contests? I don't really believe in.
But when I first started comedy, I did the Queen Comedy Competition. And it was, I got, the reason I did it was because there was also a lot of classes and I got to interact with people. Like Robert G. Lee became a mentor of mine because of it and stuff. And I got to meet Michael Palasak and a couple other people like that. So for me, it was more the learning process, not the competition process. And I felt like because there's so many different comedy styles, it's very hard to decide who the better comedian, who should win. Because there's not really a better comedian. It's just like, who had more people there that night, or I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it. It's like, it's not like weightlifting where like, you know, if someone lifts 2 more pounds than you or half an ounce or whatever it is, they're going to win because they lifted more. It's like, there's not really a way to structure that in comedy. Cause you can even be still getting the same amount of laughs. Right. You know, what they say is like, what is it? Something less, 15 laughs per minute or something like that.
Oh yes.
Whatever it is, like the laughs per minute thing. You could be killing at that, but it's not the same thing. Like maybe your setup takes longer, but you get more laughs in the end. So, but they think like, oh, because your setup took too long, you took too long for you to get there, so it's not as funny or what. It could be a million different things. Or you could say something that's not somebody's cup of tea. You could be making a joke about something that's super funny or super relatable, but they don't like that topic, and so then you're not going to win. Like it could be. It's not, I'm not a big fan of competitions. I understand the process, but what about you, Luke? You've been to some competitions too.
I haven't been in any competitions. I don't like festivals.
Yeah.
At least the ones that you have to like, you know, first of all, you submit and then you have to pay to even submit. And then you generally don't get in. So it's always like, so I don't know. I mean, I saw James at the Clean Comedy Competition. That one looks, you know, legit. And it looks like there's, you know, use for it, and you're going to grow as a comedian to go to it. So events like that are, you know, definitely I think worthwhile. But other than that, like I don't want to lose money for nothing.
But well, do you see any benefit in festivals at all? Like,
I haven't either. But like the major ones seem, you know, like really like I would love to go to the Just for Laughs festival. I mean, you know, the best comedians are always there. But in terms of local, I've only been to I think like it was like a Clean Comedy Festival where it was like workshops and stuff, and you know, more of like just meet like a networking event and then also working on the craft of comedy. So that was pretty cool.
I think if you had a festival that also included like classes and courses, and the only problem I have with that is a lot of them you submit and then they're like, we'll give you a discount, but it's like another $100 to get to that. I think if you submit, you should also get a pass to the festival because you submitted money to it to go do the class. That part, I think, is what I have an issue with. But other than that, I like festivals because you can learn. You have classes and courses and networking, all that stuff like that. So I think if you're going to do something like that, it would definitely be great if you included in the ticket or in the submission cost the ticket. So no matter what, you can still be a part of it and you're not losing you know, $50 or $35 or whatever it is you're costing to submit. Some are pretty expensive.
Yeah. Okay. And speaking of classes, I mean, that's something I wanted to try a workshop, but I'm kind of afraid because workshops have a bad reputation. Like, oh, you can't teach comedy in a class. But well, I wanted to teach basics, you know, to people that just want to at least try that. Like you said, it doesn't have to be for stand-up. You can use the, you know, the skills for anything, for any type of speaking or what.
Well, so I will tell you this. I teach a stand-up course for teens at our local teen center. And those are usually people who they have some they know that they want to be funny or they like being funny, but they have never – they don't know the parts of it. So they're – it's like you can learn how to drive a car. You don't have to know how to build a car to drive a car. So for comedy, that's the same thing. As long as you kind of know how to – what's funny or what is funny, you have a sense of humor – you just need to be taught the skills of applying that, like how, what's the basic format of a joke? How do you write a joke? How do you perform a joke? What's the best way to deliver on stage? That's the other thing, is people mostly need stage time and time behind the mic. That's the biggest thing that people are lacking because they get shy. Usually you stick a mic in someone's face, they like go whatever. So like even my first class with them, I put up a mic, I do it like it's open mic, and I just have them tell everyone about themselves from the mic stand, because that's a good way to get comfortable being on stage in front of a bunch of people. I also teach them faux pas, like things not to do, like don't wear a shirt that has like a bunch of writing on it that people will try to have to read while you're doing stand-up because it'll take away. Don't wear shorts on stage, don't wear flip-flops, you know, like that kind of stuff, like just basic things that some comedians don't know and won't learn for a while. And it'll kind of make them feel foolish, because I've seen comedians at open mics with flip-flops on, shorts, and what they think is a funny shirt. But it's like everyone's looking at your attire and not paying attention to your jokes. So you're not getting real feedback, and that's hurting you. It's making your
process. What do you do when somebody tells you, like, you know, shorts and flip-flops is their character? Like, that's who they are. So
you better have a strong, strong character then, because –
I mean, Fluffy does it. I don't know if he wears flip-flops, but
yeah, he wears shoes and shorts. Yeah, but he also wears a bright Hawaiian shirt, right? And like, so you get his character, and that works for him. But how many comedians do you know that wear shorts on stage? Almost like none. He's like the only one I can think of. So he already broke barriers by being funny. You're paying attention to his fluffiness and what he's doing, so it's not that big of a deal. I think Ralphie May also wore shorts on stage, if I remember right.
He might have. But that kind of messed me up in the beginning. Even though I was getting good advice, I felt like some comedians were just overly doing it. It's like, oh, you got to wear a watch. If you don't wear a watch, you're not a real comedian. Oh, you can't wear shorts. You got to do this. You got to do that. It even got to the point at the comedy club I was at where they made the host wear a blazer.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no.
Like you had to wear a blazer.
If that's not your character, then it would be weird. Like, if he's like, I sleep in my car, but he's wearing a blazer, you're going to be like, what the heck is going on with this guy? You know what I'm saying? Like, those two things don't mesh. So
it's like they didn't really care about the host. It's like, you're not really a comedian. You're just introducing the comics. You're representing the comedy club. You're not representing yourself as the MC.
An MC is the most pivotal role a comedian can play, because if that person starts the crowd off wrong, the rest of the night's going to go terrible. If they don't know how to control a crowd, they don't know how to get them, you know, trained to laugh at jokes, what they need to do, how they need to behave, your show will go off the rails like that. So, no, MC is probably the most important person besides the headliner. Obviously, the headliner is what most people are there for. But the MC, if he doesn't get the show on the rails, it'll automatically go off the rails, and you're not going to have a good show for anybody.
Oh, I agree. And everybody's going to be mad at you afterwards.
Yep.
I do have a question for you to see how you feel, because I got a different point of view last week. But how do you feel like when a headliner, you know, an established headliner just doesn't stop? Like he does 2 hours, maybe keeps going. Like, do you think that's kind of disrespectful to the comedy club, or should they do their hour and get off?
Was he listed as a headliner? Like, was it his show? Like this?
Yeah, it's his show. Been in a movie, like a big name.
Yeah, well, okay, so I'll tell you from a personal experience that I had. I saw Craig Robinson at the Ice House, and my wife and I sat in the front row, so we interacted with him. That show went an hour and a half longer than it was supposed to. They let him go. As long as the crowd is having fun, as long as people are not getting up and leaving, as long as everyone's still getting entertained, you still can deal drinks or whatever you need to do, as long as that stuff's happening, if it's his show, if they came to see him, let him go. Now, that was the late show, though. So if it's the early show, you got to nip that in the bud, right? Because you're not going to get to your late show otherwise. But if it's your late show, the last show of the night, why not? I mean, yes, you're probably going to have to pay your staff overtime. That might be something you want to think about. But I would say as long as the people in the audience are happy, because now if someone asked me to go see Craig Robinson again, 1,000% I'd go again. I'd be like, that was the greatest show ever that I've ever been to. And I've seen Jerry Seinfeld like 3 times. So it's like, that was amazing. He was hilarious. So much fun. Like, yes, in a heartbeat. So,
okay.
But if it's like a lineup show, like there's like 10 comedians or like I said, the early show, you're going to have to give them the light and say, hey, yeah, you got to get off because we have another show to book here. So that would be okay. I would think that. And there, as long as they didn't step on other comedians, like they didn't boot everyone else off the show just so they could do it for 2 hours and not, you know, no one else get a spot. That's kind of messed up. But I've never seen that happen.
But you don't think it's disrespectful to the staff?
It's, well, okay, as the club owner, that's the thing you're going to have to do, because the Ice House, they let them go. They were totally okay with it because everyone was having fun. Drinks were still flowing. People were still ordering, all that stuff. Yes, they were probably going to drop off the check, but once they saw they kept going, they took more drink orders too. So if it's going to make you more money, go for it. If it's not going to make you money, if like you already dropped the check and nobody can order anymore, then I would say, yeah, you cut it off, because obviously you're losing out. Now you're losing money at the club because everybody is keeping all the staff on and whoever's there and whatever. So,
yeah. I guess when you put it that way, it makes sense. It reminds me of my job. I mean, if I'm on a call and this guy really needs help, I'm not going to just be like, all right, I got to go. Like, I'm going to put in the extra effort to give him what he needs. So,
And you ran your room for how long? How long did you run the other room for that before you opened the club?
Yeah, probably about 2 years. It was at a restaurant.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah, and I mean, if you just walked in there, nobody would like want to turn this into a club. So we went, you know, all out. We bought a portable stage. We bought the lights. Just little things that we were like, man, what can enhance this to make it look like a club? And it worked. It was actually like a breakfast place that closed at like 3. Oh. So they allowed us to reopen it, you know, during the hours of, 7, 6 o'clock, and, do what we wanted and, get to keep the door or whatever.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So it really benefited you. I talked to Al, who owns Broadway Comedy Club in New York. And so I read his book about opening a club and how difficult it was in New York. And that's just because there's so many regulations there or whatever. But, would you consider like doing a write up on it or giving tips to other comedians who want to start a room somewhere?
I never thought about that. I mean, maybe I should. Maybe it'll be selfish for me to say no.
Yeah,
it's competition. But yeah, I guess most definitely. Yeah, I would do it.
I think you should write a book, because honestly, that's like one of those things where like a lot of comedians, like if you love comedy, like having a club is just something where you're like, man, I can build the comedy club that I always wanted with the people that I always wanted to make the rooms how I want and make sure that, comedians get treated with respect. They get paid properly. They get, all that kind of stuff. Cause I always think of like anyone who's on my show, like whenever I produce my own shows, I always pay them. Even if they are doing 5 minutes, they drove here, they put in the work to write the stuff. They got on stage, they did it, they entertained, they should get paid for it because it's work. Not all comedy clubs feel that same way. A lot of them feel like, hey, you should be doing this for free until you get on TV and then I'll pay you, that kind of stuff. But
yeah, can I read you a Tom Segura tweet? You just,
yeah,
what you were saying, kind of, he said it's ridiculous that comedy clubs haven't raised what they pay MC and features across the country. It's been the same rate for over 20 years. So those are the type of changes I want to make as a comedian, because I have the power to do that.
Right. I'm excited for that. I can't wait. I'll plug the club. Where can people find you at, and where can people find out more about your club and all that kind of stuff?
Well, you can find me, B Smitty Comedy on Instagram, Bobby Smith IV on Facebook. And then I have upstagecomedy.com is the website, and you can get all the social media from there.
Is the site up? I'm going to go to it right now. Hold on. Upstagecomedy.com.
Yeah. Upstagecomedy.com. So opening weekend. Ooh,
That's a good site. Your site looks good.
Oh, appreciate that. We're still working on it, but
that's great.
That's positive.
Yeah, I love it. That's awesome. And then you already know. So you're already doing like fundraisers and stuff there. Is that the one that's going to be the opening one?
Yeah, that's kind of new. So we got Friday and Saturday on Labor Day weekend with our comedian Trey Mack. But then on that Sunday, that's my wife on the flyer, by the way. And she's a model. She has a modeling agency. And she got everybody a chance to walk in Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week.
Wow.
But you know, they got to get there. September 11th weekend, hotels are not cheap. So they were a little short on money, so they had a deadline. So I decided to help her, you know, do a fundraiser and comedy show.
Nice. And then I see that you're going to be doing – are you going to be doing defensive driving at the club too?
That's the plan, but and like I said, it's a dying business. So if there's an innovative way to change defensive drive, I don't know. It's really difficult right now. But, yeah, that's the plan. I would love to.
That's awesome. Luke, did you have a question?
I'm taking a look at the website. It's really, really great. And
I love it. Yeah.
Very exciting to see. So, yeah, awesome. all the best to you and the club. Like
so cool.
Super excited to see it in the future.
Okay, hopefully we can get you guys down. I mean, that'd be cool. I'd love to get y'all in if y'all – come to San Antonio. You still, you're a working comedian, Luke?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, when the world is not shut down.
Yeah. Cause LA just brought back the mask mandate. Things are kind of tight again. So it's kind of like, ugh.
That's a fair opening the comedy club. But yeah. I don't know what's going to happen.
I know that's the hard part, right? Is like, you want to open a club, but you're like, oh man, the world is crazy. Although Texas is not the same as California. When I went to Texas, it was like COVID never even happened there. Like people just, whatever, you know, so I was like, all right, whatever.
That's true. Yeah. I can't really see them shutting down again, but you never know.
That's the thing is, it's not even based sometimes even on the state. It's, you know, the federal government might say, hey, you got to do this thing. And like, okay, we got to do what we got to do. And we have to abide by the rules to play the game. And that's what we're doing. That's a rough game. And so one more question, will this become your full-time job? You'll be a full-time comedy club owner?
So that's another fear, because, you know, I'm a comedian. I feel like I'm still in, you know, my prime. So I don't know. I mean, would it be messed up if I booked myself too much? Like, I don't want to become that guy.
No, actually at Flappers in Burbank, Dave Rents, who's part owner of the club, gets booked on shows like once a week or a couple times a week. So no, it's, and he's great. So he does a great job. He's very funny, but he also, I think, if you took too much time off stage where you're just more running it and not getting on stage, you're going to lose touch with stand up too. So I think what Dave does is perfect, because he still gets to be a comedian and run comedians. And also when you're in the show or on the show lineup, you're going to see what things need to be fixed about the shows. Like, oh, this is going too slow. This thing's not happening right, or whatever. And, you know, because you can't always be at every show, although you're going to try to, right?
Yeah.
But if you're on the shows, you're going to get more feedback from the comedians. You're going to hear what they talk about, hear what they say. They might not normally say, knowing that you're the booker or the club owner or whatever, but because you're on the show, you might be able to pick up some of that stuff. Hopefully they're not saying anything bad, like, this club sucks, I can't believe I'm here, you know, like that stuff. So
yeah, no, you got an excellent, how long you been doing this? You got like a good take on a lot of stuff.
I have been doing stand-up, I'm in my seventh year stand-up now.
Wow. You're at the point where, like, you start, like, they say you don't get like good until your seventh year. That's what I've always heard. But
yeah, and I'm working on a set to go to do Dry Bar and stuff like that. So there's, like, I know where I want to be and where I want to go. And I think a lot of comedians meander, and I started older. Like, I started at 35, so like or actually 34 and a half, but I don't have time to meander. I can't be meandering in this business. I have to hustle and do things. So I write, I perform, I, you know, I'm creative, I do all these other things, because I don't have all the time. Luke's young. Luke's like in his 20s, so he's got time. Right? Right?
I'm in my 20s. Yeah. I'm in my 30s.
Yeah, your 30s? Are you in your 30s? I thought you're like 28.
No.
How old are you?
32.
Oh, it's that baby face. That's not fair. So, but Luke has more time, right? Like, he has more time to get to where he wants to go. And as I'm, and the older you get, more people don't want to book you because you're out of touch with the kids these days, or whatever quote they're going to use on you. Oh, you're not a millennial comedian, are you?
Is that true?
Oh yeah. Wow. Well, you can't do colleges because you're not young looking, or whatever. Oh, it's like, okay, well, that's BS, but you know, whatever. But also I do clean comedy, so the I have a little bit more time, but it's also trying to find venues that will accept clean comedians, which is what we're working on too, is trying to get to more places. Like, we want to book churches, we want to book, you know, clean festivals, we want to book clean rooms and stuff. And I'm not saying a club has to be clean, because I don't think that's true either, because I'm a big fan, you know, I grew up on, you know, Rodney Dangerfield and George Carlin and Richard Pryor and Chris Rock. So for me, you don't have to be clean to be funny, but I do it so that, like you said, I can bring my family to the shows and stuff like that.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, I'll probably be reaching out to you if I have any questions, you know,
Yeah, yeah. And there's a good book by, I was looking it up. It's by a comedian we had on here, Rob Delaney, called Don't Wear Shorts on Stage. It actually has a lot of good tips. I know it's the book title sounds weird, but it's actually like a fantastic book. We had him, I interviewed him on here and asked him a bunch more questions. Well, I'm going to have to look it up real quick. But I think that has a lot of things that really helped me be wise to like how comedy works and stuff like that. So, oh, Rob Durham. Sorry. Sorry, Rob. Rob Durham. I apologize. I don't know why I said Rob Delaney. That's also a comedian, I believe. Rob Delaney. Okay. But Rob Durham, and so Don't Wear Shorts on Stage. I'll link it in the show notes too, so you have it. But we're looking forward to opening week. We would love to have you back. We'd love to help promote it. So just let us know what we could do, and we'd love to see that really blow up and definitely come out and come support the club. So you guys don't miss awesome. Uptown Comedy. Don't miss B. Smitty here, Bobby Smith. Don't miss out on that stuff. We'll put all his links in the show notes. Luke, where can people find you at?
Luke LaCoy on the social medias and the Fiverr.
And the Fiverr. And I did what you said and added myself to Upwork with projects. So we'll see how that goes.
Nice.
All right. And you can find me, jamesdcreviston.com, comedypreneur.com, or you go to Fiverr and look up James D. Creviston, all one word. Comedypreneur is where you're going to get all kinds of tips and advice about stand-up comedy. Some things that I talked to Bobby about today were things that I wrote about, because literally I love comedy. I'm a comedy nerd, and I want to know everything about comedy that I possibly can to make comedians' lives easier and better, help them get paid. Somebody pitched me a comedy union. I don't know. I'm 50-50 on that, because part of me feels like, yeah, that might be a good thing. But at this other time, could it keep people out? Could it be a gatekeeper that we don't need in the industry? I don't know. So maybe we'll talk about that on a future episode. Bobby, thank you again for being on the show. Shout out one more time where people can find you.
B. Smitty Comedy Instagram, Bobby Smith IV on Facebook, and upstagecomedy.com.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much. Thanks for being here. And thanks for listening. Please like, subscribe, and have a great one, guys. Bye.